From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio today. Ross Dellinger, LSU beat writer, will join us here in a little bit to talk Ed Orgeron. And the Tigers headed to Oxford this weekend, Saturday night at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Also a couple different podcasts coming your way. Larry Holder, who covers the New Orleans Saints, as well as some LSU and some different stuff on the Beer Garden this week. Also a soft verbal podcast. We teased it yesterday. Jacob Peeler, Ole Miss wide receivers coach, will be up on the site as well. So a lot of different podcasts coming to you. And remember, as you're coming into town this week, check out the Oxford Exxon. Plenty of catering options available with the Oxford Exxon, whether it's a couple slabs of ribs, whether it's a pound of pork, and you get quart size sides as well when you pick one of those catering options, tailgate options with the Oxford Exxon. Also next door at the Oxford Crystal, 49-cent wings. They're basically paying you to eat wings this weekend, so go pick them up at the Oxford Crystal. Get whatever you need food-wise in town, on your way into town, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. You call the number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He sends you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. No haggling. It's right to the bottom line. And then it's up to you. You have your quote. If you feel like it, you can shop it around. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of this podcast all over the place, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's really that simple. And to make it even better, at the end of your deal, tell Corey, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. You can mention the soft verbal presented by Billy's Pecans, any of the above, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Bear with us a little bit today. We had a cord go out this morning. Really the first time that's happened. We've done a lot of podcasts, and it's the first time that we've had hardware go out the morning of the show, I believe. It is as technically incapable as Neil and I are at times. The microphones typically work. The cords typically work. But today the cord went out, so we're sitting beside each other. We are passing a microphone back and forth because that's our dedication to you, I guess, as we do this here podcast. We'll try to fix that as soon as possible. But anyway, it's going to be a little bit longer pause than usual. But hey, you're getting content. You are getting a show today, so it is what it is. Yesterday, content up at the site. There was a story up centering around Marquise Haynes on the site, as well as Greg Little video, if I'm correct in saying that. Ole Miss got a commitment last night, so a good bit of stuff up at rebelgrove.com. That was a 2019 commitment, a kid from Meridian, so you can read about that. Russell with content there at rebelgrove.com. Neil, as I've got ESPN up on my computer right now. You are can see the same thing. I was not watching the NBA game last night. However, Gordon Hayward injured, breaks his ankle, dislocates his ankle in the first minutes of the season with his new team. I was sick for so many different people involved. Him, his family, obviously, the recovery he has ahead of him. But everybody with the Celtics, I mean, their season is essentially over minutes into the opener after doing so many offseason moves to think they can challenge Cleveland in the Eastern Division.
So I had been excited about this game all day. Cleveland, Boston, even though Isaiah Thomas wasn't playing, I was excited about the game. Kyrie back in Cleveland. I was listening. I had Carson. So I had football practice, as you mentioned. I had content up on the site. I left football practice at about 6:25 and drove to get Carson. His soccer practice ended at 6:45. Now, Carson's all thunder, but he's excited or was excited about the Celtics this year. They're fun. He likes Kyrie. He likes Gordon Hayward. They were going to be fun. And so we're listening to the Cleveland Cavaliers pregame broadcast on XM as we get home. And he's comes in from soccer, and he runs upstairs to shower so that he can get down and see the game. And he literally had just gotten out of the shower and was heading down the stairs when he heard me go, "Oh, my God," because I watched it. I was sitting right where you're sitting right now. I had taken the podcast stuff down so that make the room comfortable. And I'm starting to set up the Greg Little stuff to put it up on the site. And I'm watching the play develop, and Hayward starts on the right wing, and it's an alley-oop. He's going behind LeBron James and behind Jay Crowder, and Kyrie Irving throws an alley-oop, and he throws it low. Wasn't a particularly good pass. I'm not blaming Kyrie Irving, by the way. But you could see the play develop, and I saw Hayward go up, and I thought, that's not going to get there. And when he went down, you heard this sound that at first I thought was his back hitting the floor. And then I saw his leg. And I almost got sick. It's just, it was as bad as I've ever seen. Someone asked about Kevin Ware, the Louisville player. I know that was really bad. This looked worse, but I don't know. Dislocated ankle. The ankle was turned in a grotesque manner. The leg was clearly broken. Like you said, it's just, it's his first game as a Celtic. His first game. The tone of the season changes. The tone of that game changed, though, so remarkably. The air in that building had been, you know, Kyrie, because the Celtics won the tip. Kyrie Irving gets the ball, and the boos start, and he scores the first basket of the season. And it was going to be all this stuff about Kyrie, and it immediately went away. All of that stuff went away. And it was about Hayward and Boston, and it really kind of ruined the night for me. I was planning on, like, watching a lot of sports, and I was going to flip between the Cubs and the Dodgers, and I was going to watch the Warriors and the Rockets. And I didn't get into any of it after that, because I like Hayward, and I was so looking forward to this season, and Boston was going to be an interesting team. And it just shows you how fickle it is when you're in sports, and injury can happen so fast.
There's nothing funny about this at all, but I will tell you what was going through my mind. So I didn't forget the NBA season was starting, but I didn't know who was playing. Like, if I'd really thought about it, I'd have known it was Cavs Celtics, but I wasn't thinking that way. In my head, I was going, okay, I'm going to watch the end of the Astros Yankees, and then I'm going to watch Cubs Dodgers till I get sleepy, and that was kind of going to be my night. I was thinking, okay, that's what I've got coming up, and I hadn't even really turned the TV on. Well, I didn't see anything about on Twitter when I first logged on about, hey, it's Celtics Cavs or anything really. All I see is this stream of Gordon Hayward stuff, and I saw your tweet. I got to think, oh my God, was what you tweeted. Something along those lines. And I guess I was caring about you in that minute because I thought, is he the guy the Thunder just got in the offseason? I could remember. I knew it was Gordon Hayward, Paul George, somebody, but I was going, was it Hayward? Did the Thunder season just ended? And I thought, God, that is going to be one morning household in the morning as we were doing this. And then as I start looking, I realize it's the Celtics and it's Hayward, not George. But That was the first thing that went through my mind. But, yeah, I mean, just everything from the Celtics general manager all the way down, I was sick last night. I mean, I just thought you did all this to get to this point, and now it is what it is, whatever that is. So.
And you can see why they were so optimistic about their team, even after that happened, and they were shocked. I mean, they fell down 18, 19 points. They came back. The game is meaningless. One game is meaningless any more than the Rockets beating the Warriors doesn't necessarily mean anything. But Jason Tatum, the kid from Duke, top pick in the draft, really looks the part. He's a 19-year-old NBA player, not intimidated by the moment at all. Kyrie showed a lot of leadership. Al Horford showed a lot of leadership. The Cavaliers won the game. LeBron's great. LeBron's going to be the greatest. There's a chance LeBron's the best player in the league when he's 40. But Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade, I'm not sure it fits. Now, they get Isaiah Thomas back, and who knows, when that happens, they might be really explosive. But the one thing that was weird, social media is so weird. most people are really cool on social media. The people who, A, have to make it a joke, everything's not funny. And I realize that I fell into the traps. When you tell me you fell into the trap, I know I fell into the trap. Skip Bayless and FS1. Does that really work? Why does that work? Is there really an audience for that, Chase, that in the minutes following what at that moment looked like a grotesque, possibly career-threatening injury of this young player who is, from all accounts, a really good guy? I mean, his NBA colleagues rushed to his support last night. Is it really necessary to immediately go, well, there's that clears the path for LeBron James? Even LeBron James wouldn't want the path cleared like that. Skip Bayless does stuff like that, and you just wonder, as someone who at one point in his career aspired to be a national columnist, is that what it takes? Do you have to be tasteless? Do you have to have no couth at all? How does that work?
Well, it's not working. Skip has become a cartoon character because nothing is working with his show. The ratings are awful. The FS1's studio programming is struggling overall. He goes crazier and crazier and crazier, thinking that will bring eyeballs because they get pissed off at him. That's all this is now. No, he's a cartoon character. He's not the guy that wrote fairly thoughtful columns in the Denver Post there for a while and at one point. I mean, he's not even the same person. It's completely different. He signed a huge contract that he's not able to deliver in any form or fashion is where this thing is right now. So, no, I mean, Skip is Skip. I ignore him. I don't think I even follow him on Twitter, frankly.
So what you're saying is that's what selling your soul looks like, personified.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's doing anything in the world to, in his mind, remain relevant, whatever that is. I mean, that's why I don't always agree with him either, but that's why Richard Deesh or Dyche or whatever screws with him all the time. Every time Skip tweets something, he uses the same like 8 words and then puts Skip's ratings up against like Puppy Dog Pals or Mickey Mouse Clubhouse or something along those lines that where Disney's just hammering Skip's show because I know at one point Skip's show was a 0.0 in like 19 different major markets.
It's probably not the rating you're looking for, I'm guessing. I don't know. I just thought it was so tasteless last night. But, it doesn't mean anything coming from me. But I'm with a lot of people. I was encouraged to hear late last night that the feeling is there's no ligament damage, which is somewhat shocking. That they were able to reset the bone on the floor, which I cannot imagine the pain, but that the Cavaliers have a great medical facility there in the building, and they were able to take really, really good care of him quickly. They got him to Boston. He's having surgery this morning, and I'm like a whole lot of people out there, whether you're a Celtic fan or not, I will be more than pleased to one day see Gordon Hayward play basketball again, because that was tough. And I mean, you could just sort of even sense it at the beginning of the Rockets Warriors game. That took some of the steam out of that deal. Guys, look at that, and like Steve Kerr said, you realize very quickly how fragile your career is. For people say, man, these guys hold out for the money, and you don't know when the money train ends. Get what you can get when you can get it, because it can all go away literally in a snap. And you see the reaction instantly from the Cavalier players that were right there next to it. They heard it. They knew how bad it was. That was rough.
Going to go to Ross in about 10 minutes or so, but I guess finishing up this first segment, last night you mentioned it, Marquise Haynes story up on the site, Greg Little video. Greg, a guy that we really hadn't talked to a whole lot. I thought he had one of his poor games on Saturday, and yet Pro Football Focus, who grades out every play, had him on the SEC Team of the Week, along with A.J. Brown and Jordan Wilkins, both there as well. Greg graded out the second highest offensive lineman in the league for the week. So I guess just thoughts. Obviously, the video's up. I suggest everybody watch it. But What did you kind of glean from his interview last night?
Well, two things. One, they've been freed up to get more physical. He said that, you know, I mean, I think he was being careful not to throw anybody under the bus, but he was talking about how last year they were kind of passive offensively from a blocking standpoint. Everything was getting into pass sets, protect, protect, protect. And that this year, when early in the season they said, hey, let's get physical, he was basically, and I'm paraphrasing here very loosely, they kind of forgotten how. And so, you know, Jack McNeil has encouraged them to get nasty. You know, and I asked, what does nasty mean? It just means finishing blocks, just getting after it a little bit more. He talked about how they like that. They want to keep doing that. There is a confidence inside that program that they have found a running game. Now, obviously, and I asked this question. I said, you obviously are. You know, Vanderbilt, at least statistically, is not a good defense. LSU, statistically, is a better defense. Are you, you know, confident that you're going to be able to have the same success against LSU that you had against Vanderbilt? And his answer, of course, is football is football. So that's a big challenge this week. I actually believe that Ole Miss is going to attempt to line up and run the ball at LSU some. Because I think the belief inside that program right now is that if it's balanced, that is a dynamic offense. And that doesn't mean 50-50. It just means you have the ability to run the football. If you don't have the ability to run the football, I think the consensus is that offense might not work. And in fairness, no offense works unless you are just dynamic all over the place. And then the other thing I took from it was, you know, he and I talked in the summer, Greg, and he had talked about how last year there were two or three games where he thought to himself, I've got to get some weight off. I've got to get leaner. I've got to get quicker. And one of those games was LSU because Arden Key didn't dominate him, but there were some plays where Arden Key's quickness was too much for Greg. And so he got into the offseason and really changed his body, lost some weight. He's definitely leaner than he was a year ago. And that, you know, he was excited to sort of test those skills against Key again this Saturday. I mean, he said it with as much respect as you can say it. It wasn't trash. It was just, you know, he's a great player. And last year, his hands were more than full with him. And it was one of those games, that game, and I think the Auburn game, maybe one other, where he said, I've got to get some weight off and change my body a little bit and get more agile. And he thinks he's done that, and I think he's looking forward to Saturday night to see just how far he's come.
Have you heard much from anybody, or did I guess Marquise or anybody else yesterday say, is there something that is a technique difference? Was it just Vanderbilt's offensive line? I mean, what do you think allowed Ole Miss to have as much success as they did with their front seven? Because that's what's amazing about this game. With both teams – Ole Miss, obviously, their offensive line is being challenged. Their running game is being challenged. Can they do it in back-to-back weeks? Can they do it against a competent defense? But then this is not an LSU offensive line that's incredibly talented compared to most other LSU offensive lines, too. I mean, it's a work in progress as well. So is there carryover from an Ole Miss defensive standpoint from a front seven also?
Well, you're getting into an area for me that is not my expertise. But from what I could gather, they've basically changed alignment a little bit. And as it pertains to Haynes, they got him out wider and just said, go after the quarterback. Rush. Do what you do well. I thought Freddie Roach gave a great quote where he said, sometimes we overcoach kids. And I think he meant we as coaches in general overcoach kids. And they sat down and said, hey, what does this kid do well? Let's figure out a way to let him do what he does well, and then let's adjust. And I gathered that they've kind of put another guy on the line, showing some more five-man fronts even, to force offensive linemen to not be able to double-team Haynes, to let him have one-on-one with the tackle. And Vanderbilt's, whether it was the right tackle or the left tackle, he wanted no part of that. He was glad to get the hell off that field. LSU's not particularly great at tackle either. Sadiq Charles, the kid out of Madison's playing a lot. It's an interesting spot. And I asked – one of the questions I asked Marquise, I was actually proud of it, it was a decent football question, is can you allow yourself to be rush first against an LSU team that is as run heavy as it is with that jet sweep and some of the stuff that they like to do. They really like to run to the perimeter. That's a lot of what they like to do. And then they like to get you looking to the perimeter and then gash you on the inside with Darius Guice, who's a very gifted, talented, tough running back. And he said, yeah, it still works. It's what we're going to do. So I'm sure LSU, this is the fun part of football, I think, for people like you and me. LSU has looked at the film, and Matt Canada has looked at the film and said, okay, here's what they're doing with Haynes. If they keep doing that, here's how we can exploit that. It becomes a chess match. And so at some point, Ole Miss, if it gets exploited there, is going to have to make a quick adjustment and say, okay, now you have to do this. And that's where the chess match of film and week by week comes in. And one of the reasons that you have to be really careful with the transitive property of football as you make predictions is things change week to week. So that's going to be fun to watch. But Marquise said he just feels a lot more confident. He gets to play his style of football, and it's something that they talked a lot about, and they finally just sort of turned him loose, and at least for 1 week it worked. And I think he's going into this game against LSU with a whole lot more confidence than maybe he had, you know, when they went to Alabama to Auburn earlier in the season.
We will talk a lot of LSU now with Ross Dellinger. Before we do that, podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also, leader in condo financing in Oxford. So ask Jason Lowe about the float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. 662-234-2704 or J-Lowe, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. You hear a lot from people right now about, hey, the football program's kind of down. Secondary housing market's not good. Condo sales aren't good. The numbers don't bear that out. I've seen the numbers. The numbers say that it's a really good time to make a condo buy and that resale values have held pretty steady. Don't take my word for it. Get in touch with Harry Alexander. It's H-A at HarryAlexander.com. His website is HarryAlexander.com. You can check out all that's available, filter through by what you're looking for, and then let Harry do the rest. Again, H-A at HarryAlexander.com. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael Oswalt a call. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Look him up on the site, gotland.com. That's got-land.com. You can read his recent testimonials, check out his track record, look online, see the properties that he has listed. If you're a buyer, Michael has the biggest land inventory in Mississippi. If you're thinking about selling, if you're on the fence, if it's in your future, Michael will come to your home, tell you what he does, market your property, put drones in the sky, whatever it takes, he'll get it sold. Here's how you get in touch with him, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. Right now, OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Ole Miss basketball tickets are available. The season getting closer and closer. It's OleMissTix.com. You can also look for tickets for Saturday night's game between Ole Miss and LSU at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Again, OleMissTix.com. And now to talk about that game, we'll go visit with Ross Dellinger here on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
So, Ross, Ed Orgeron making his return to Oxford as a head coach on Saturday. It's been a little mixed around here. I mean, you'll run into certain pockets of people that are, I guess, intrigued by this game, intrigued by him coming back. But from the standpoint of LSU, They just need another win. He doesn't need to kind of lose whatever momentum he's gotten in the last couple weeks. What kind of story is the Ole Miss Ed Orgeron angle in Baton Rouge this week?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of exhausted a little bit. You know, obviously as the interim head coach at LSU last year, I think it was his third game maybe as interim head coach, he played, you know, LSU played Ole Miss, and that angle was played up, and that was a really big storyline. I mean, you know, this year you have him returning to Oxford. Of course, he's done that before too, though, you know, as an assistant at LSU his first year here in 2015. Tigers went up there and just got pummeled. That was when Les Miles' job was, most people thought, was going to end then. It never did. It took about a year later. But so, I think the storyline is there, but it's something that's been talked about now for a year. And if you go back to his first year here as an assistant going up to Oxford, it was, you know, talked about then. So I'm not sure how big of a storyline it is here. Ed certainly made it bigger earlier this week when he told in a one-on-one interview with ESPN's Chris Lowe that while he was at Ole Miss, he was only thinking about being at LSU. So that's like you're with the brunette, but really thinking about the blonde, and that has made it a bigger story, I think.
Yeah, that was such the weird quote because – in a way, it looked so stupid for him to make. It looked like something that made no sense whatsoever. But then when you read the full quote, part of me almost said, well, Ole Miss was a train wreck, partly because of him and just the program as a whole. He probably was quite envious, if nothing else, of LSU at the time. So I kind of read that quote in multiple ways and thought, you know, like most things with Ed, some things are kind of his fault, and then some things are the fault of people who just continue to hire him and put him in certain positions.
Right. Yeah. That was one thing, too. You know, I mean, I'm good friends with Chris and certainly like his work. But that's the thing with Twitter. You know, we you can only put so much in a tweet, and it was kind of a partial quote, but he still, the meaning was still the same. I don't think he was taken out of context or anything, but it was a partial quote. And if you read, you know, read the full quote, it makes it sound a little better, but it's still something that Ed probably knows, he shouldn't have said. But you know, that's one thing about Ed Orgeron. I will give him that. There are two things I think about Ed, this was probably somewhat true in his time at Oxford also, is that he's a dang good recruiter, and he's pretty blunt. He can be pretty blunt and pretty honest and say things that maybe other coaches won't, and that's a good example.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, it's been 10 years since he leaves Oxford. He was a horrendous fit, but you or I or anybody, they said, hey Ross, you get to make $850,000, and here's a job that you probably can't do, but you want to give it a shot? We all would say yes. So that's what's funny about this is, you know, it's hard to blame Ed Orgeron for anything that happened in Oxford without blaming the administration that hired him, because it was just a train wreck in so many different ways. I mean, he couldn't find his own personality as a head coach. He'd open practice, close practice, open practice. He'd, you know, fought with Stephen Godfrey about the Patrick Willis injury. I mean, it was something week after week after week. But he always worked really hard. He always tried. It was just completely inefficient and completely out of the ordinary of what you would expect from an SEC head coach. Since he's been in Baton Rouge, how has he kind of managed that? I mean, how do you feel like he is from an efficiency standpoint and from actually being the CEO of a program at this point?
Well, as I'm working on the story that I'm working on this week about Ed, in Ole Miss, you know, like I said, it's kind of been an exhausted storyline. But one thing I haven't written about, I've written about his time at Ole Miss and how rough and how big of a disaster it was during the 3 years and how he was fired and, you know, how he's learned from the job there and blah, blah, blah. But I haven't really written about how he was hired. He credits the hiring of Kim at Ole Miss to getting this job. You know, he says he wouldn't have this job if it wasn't, it wouldn't be for the failures actually at Ole Miss, which he used certainly in his campaign to get this job. So how was Ed Orgeron hired? You know, that is a story that is an interesting one. As I'm digging in, it's really juicy and really interesting. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's almost not necessarily Ed Orgeron's fault that he failed in Oxford. Maybe they shouldn't have necessarily dismissed the coach before him in the first place. You know, I think a lot of people feel that way. And that's one of the things I'm getting as I'm kind of working on this story is, hey, you know, shouldn't have fired David Cutcliffe first off, and then should have had a better backup plan. And so it's interesting to dig in and to find some of the details of you know, how he was hired and you know, how it kind of all fell in his lap and how big of a part, Chancellor Robert Kiat, former Chancellor Robert Kiat was and all that. So it really interesting. And I think you hit it. You know, you gotta kind of look to the top in that situation and say, hey, you guys gave the keys to the program to Ed. You know, here, I'll say this here at LSU. You know, it's a little, you know, I don't think Ed Orgeron was managed at all in his time in Oxford. And by the AD, by the chancellor, by associate ADs, I don't think he was really managed by anybody for whatever reason. That's a little different here. You know, there's a little more hands in the cookie jar here. And that might be something that usually would be bad, but I think that Ed is okay with it, especially after his time in Oxford. He's kind of working with him and the AD here have a great relationship, and you guys saw him. He admitted a few weeks ago the AD met with Ed and met with his coordinators during the middle of the season after they lost to Troy at home. Well, since then, guess what's happened? You know, LSU's 1-2 straight over top 25 teams. So it's kind of good that he has that relationship here that he maybe didn't there at Ole Miss.
When they lost to Troy that night, were more people – that fan base obviously was livid at the moment. Was it toward Ed Orgeron or was it toward Joe Oliva?
You know, just like your last question about how you have to kind of blame the top, don't blame Ed for his time at Ole Miss, blame people who hired him. It is kind of that here, too. That's what's kind of happened. It's been more of blaming Joe Oliva. And we saw a lot of the backlash after the loss to Troy pointed, you know, national media, local media even, certainly fans have pointed toward Joe Oliva. And, you know, I sit in the press box. I sit right next to Joe Oliva's suite. I can see inside of it. And he was literally on the edge of his seat sometimes during that Auburn game. You know, he knows his tenure is tied to Ed Orgeron. And that's something that I think he's accepted, and he realizes that it is a what Ed does on the field is going to affect his job status a ton. And I think he's very well aware of that. And it was pretty obvious after the Troy game where the blame was going, and it was at the top.
Yeah, I can never decide if Joe Oliva or Jay Jacobs knows where more skeletons are buried and has more weird job security in this conference between the two of them, because it does seem like it, though, finally they're at that point where if Ed Orgeron doesn't succeed to whatever success means, Joe Oliva probably doesn't make another football head coaching hire as the athletic director at LSU.
Right. Yeah, you would have a hard time getting me to believe that LSU boosters and whatnot would allow him to make another hire. That would be that'd be pretty surprising. And I think, you know, it's kind of one of those obvious things, you know, that, if Ed fails, I mean, Joe fails, and they're not going to let Joe have another crack. We know about, you know, I think everybody, certainly here locally in Baton Rouge, knows about Joe's past hires. You know, he hired Trent Johnson, and he hired Johnny Jones, basketball coaches. And Trent ended up leaving, but leaving on not great terms. I mean, he was probably going to get fired the next season anyway. And then Johnny Jones got fired. So, you know, it's you couple that with if this doesn't work out, and you have probably a change at the top, you know, and that's just one of the, not that anything I know specifically is going to happen, but that was kind of an obvious thing.
We take a break in our talk with Ross Dellinger to tell you the podcast is brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf. They have new holiday lighting during the holiday season. So for a free quote, 662-607-7773, MasterCutsLawn.com. And when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is on them.
The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. You can go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about it here on the podcast. You heard about the dealership at rebelgrove.com, and you'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. Again, GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, ComerHeatingAndAir.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of the year, it's a popular trip to go do the inshore trips for speckled trout, triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John, 228-348-7817. And now back to Chase's interview with Ross Dellinger on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
If nothing else, I give LSU a lot of credit last weekend because 20-0 right there to Auburn would have been really easy to lay down to think, this thing's over. Last week was more about, you know, Florida than maybe ourselves. He does have them playing hard, though. I mean, obviously a dumb question because everybody was shocked. But what was it like covering that game and kind of seeing that comeback? Because you have to think when Auburn went up 20-0, you were probably writing a whole completely different story and maybe already had started.
Yeah. It was wild. Just very unexpected. I did not. What was incredible is it wasn't just the first half to the second half. It was the first quarter to the last three quarters. Is LSU's defensive adjustment, defensive turnaround, whatever. I mean, it was incredible to see an Auburn offense that had rolled up 200 yards in the first quarter, including, like, you know, 100, 115, whatever, on the ground, to just go completely flat. I mean, just it was really incredible to see. And I think, you know, they did make, you know, LSU did make adjustments, but Auburn, you know, they kind of sat there in a lot of ways and was just going to run the ball and take these deep shots. And, it just wasn't working out. And LSU made their adjustments, and they got a rally going. And offensively, they started to break off some big plays. And all of a sudden, man, you get to the late in the third quarter, and it's a non-point game. And it was a non-point game at halftime, but it's one of those things you expected Auburn to come out and keep rolling. And the defensive, the difference in LSU's defense is just really incredible. And vice versa, the difference in Auburn's offense from the first quarter on was just incredible. Then you have the big punt return, and that's when you kind of knew. I mean, when LSU returned that punt with about 14 minutes left in the game, you pretty much knew they were going to win the game. They were still down by two points. And their offense had really struggled in a lot of ways. They only had like two good drives in the game, but you just knew the momentum was turning. And even though Tiger Stadium was probably only 3/4 full, it was loud, and it was really incredible to watch again today. You know, those kinds of things that happen in that game happen against Troy. I mean, LSU gets behind and comes back, you know, roars back, and they almost did it against Troy. It happens against non-SEC teams, and for it to happen against not just an SEC team, but a team that was ranked number 10 at the time and really rolling, to see it happen, that was really, really kind of shocking.
I know they had the 1 week where it was the main storyline. Has everything kind of calmed down between Ed Orgeron messing with Matt Canada? What's going on with the offense as far as – are they at least doing what Canada would like to do offensively at this point?
It sure seems that way. And, you know, yeah, Ed came out – like I said earlier, you know, there's one thing about Ed. He's kind of blunt and honest, and he owned up to that, the fact that he meddled in the offense a little bit leading up to that Troy game. And as crazy as it sounds, I mean, they played two different offenses in a lot of ways during that game. I mean, during the first half, they played kind of a different offense, and they went back to Matt Canada's shifting and motions and stuff. And that's the thing, is that Ed admits to telling Matt to stop motioning and pre-snap motioning and shifting. Well, that's the whole point of Matt Canada's offense. That's the main point, is the pre-snap and shifting in motion. They determine what Matt calls. They determine the defense adjustments to those shifts and motions determine what play call, what happens. And so that was a huge piece. And, you know, of course, LSU lost the game when they're playing two different offenses in a game. I mean, that's going to happen. So Ed admitted to that, and you could tell the difference the next game against Florida. You know, we saw a lot of his offense that we had not seen this season. We saw more shifting and motioning than ever. We saw quarterback runs even with Danny Etling that we had not seen early in the year. We saw a lot more. We saw less pounding the ball in between the tackles. We saw the Matt Canada offense that we saw at Pittsburgh, and we saw that again against Auburn. You know, it didn't have as much success against Auburn as it had against Florida, but it was pretty clear what happened after that Troy game, and it was pretty clear that Ed Orgeron handed over the keys.
What do you expect for LSU's kind of attack to be toward Ole Miss? I mean, obviously Ole Miss is not – handle the run game very well from a defensive standpoint with Darius Geis and different guys back there. That would be the most common sense in the world. Is it just going to be a steady diet of runs, or is Canada kind of the guy that wants to stay somewhat play call number balanced than some coaches?
Well, it'll be interesting because Ole Miss struggles so much to stop the run, and LSU has, for an LSU team, has really struggle to run the ball, especially in between the tackles. They've had success with the jet sweeps in the end of rounds and the toss plays, but they've really struggled at what was Les Miles' forte, what was always LSU's forte, and that's running the ball between the tackles. That was really a struggle, and that's been a struggle. So I wonder if Matt won't try to do that, knowing Ole Miss is, in a way, that's their weak point. If we'll see more of that than we have the last couple of weeks, I'm guessing we will. But you're still going to see the primary kind of piece of his offense, and that's those jet sweep motions and end arounds and all that stuff, and those even run. He's got a few run pass options, but I bet we'll see more of Darius Geis up the middle. You know, Geis has been kind of limited because of a knee injury, and Darrell Williams, the backup, who's at times just as good, kind of a different runner, but he's been limited because of an ankle. So they've kind of been limited there, but they're growing healthier. And so I bet we'll see a little more old school, maybe LSU, in this one, just because of Ole Miss's run defense and and the running back's growing a little healthy.
Yeah, from what I've heard and what I've seen just from television, different things, this does not look like a typical LSU offensive line. Neil and I were discussing that before you came on the show today. It just doesn't look quite as cohesive, quite as physical as you mentioned. But other than run game, how is it kind of done in pass protection? Danny Etling, not the most agile guy in the world, so how have they kind of kept him upright to this point?
Yeah, the offensive line, you know, just to give your listeners an idea of LSU's offensive line, they have, for the first time ever in program history, they started a true freshman on the line in a season opener. For the first time since at least the 80s, they've started two true freshmen on the line in just a game during the season. And last 2 weeks ago at Florida, they had to play most of the game with three true freshmen on the offensive line for what is believed to be the first time in school history. It's been really incredible. And probably people are asking, well, how the heck are they in this position? Five offensive linemen transferred over the offseason for various reasons. And you had some recruiting gaps over the last two or three years that have led to depth problems. So it's really been incredible. And in this one, they'll probably start two true freshmen. They'll start a true freshman at left tackle. Sadiq Charles is actually from Jackson, Mississippi. And then they'll start a true freshman at right guard, which has been the case all year, and Ed Ingram from Texas. And they'll have two rookies there, and they'll have kind of a banged up right tackle, Toby Weathersby. I think they expect probably to get him back in this game. So it's been a struggle, and that's why it's been a struggle to run the ball between the tackles, and that's why it's been certainly through the first four games a struggle in pass protection. That's been better over the last few weeks, but. I mean, you know, they're running. They're getting Danny out of the pocket a little more, Danny Etling. They're certainly getting him more quicker throws. You're going to see that. And they've been running him a little more to try to actually relieve some pressure on that offensive line. So Matt has done, it seems like, a good job of knowing that his O-line is kind of weak a little bit at some spots because they're so young, and doing things like quick throws and even running some quarterback draws and things like that to relieve a little pressure off that unit in running outside too. You know, I mean, O-line doesn't have a whole lot of jobs in these jet sweeps. I mean, they're not the guys doing the main blocking. So they've been doing a lot of that, and they've been doing a lot of that for a reason, because they're young and inexperienced and struggling in a way on the line.
Yeah, Sadiq Charles is probably in charge of blocking Marquise Haynes the week after Haynes looked a little more like his usual self. He had, I think, three and a half sacks against Vanderbilt last week, and was just a little more physical, a little more aggressive than we had seen him at different times. I think he was probably thinking a little less. On the other side of the ball, last couple things, Charles, appreciate the time. Alabama, Auburn did a really nice job kind of flushing Shea Patterson out of the pocket, making sure he had to throw across his body when he's flushed out and move one direction. Kind of made him play one side of the field. Obviously, LSU takes pride in its defensive backs. What do you kind of see from that chess match between Patterson and the LSU defense?
Yeah, LSU's defense had, or secondary at least, had probably their best game in recent memory against Auburn. I kind of crunched some of the numbers, and it was really incredible. You know, in man-to-man coverage down the field, Jordan Stidham, who Auburn's quarterback, who entered 71% completion percentage, completed 4 of 21 passes down the field in man coverage, and overall he was at 34% completion percentage. I mean, the DBs had 11 pass breakups. I think it was really impressive, and they're going to get a bigger test though against Ole Miss. And Ed Orgeron has said earlier this week he's raved about Ole Miss's receivers and how strong they are at that position, and how at least I think he said three of them he expects to get drafted in the top two rounds of the draft. So they know that they're in for even a bigger test this week, and that should be an interesting matchup to watch, along with Arden Key. You know, he had the dynamic LSU edge rusher, finally was dynamic. You know, it's been he's returned. You know, just to give your listeners some information, you know, that they might not know. You know, he missed all the spring practice, taking his leave of absence for undisclosed reasons. You know, in May, he had shoulder surgery, so he missed all the summer work. He didn't really, he wasn't really full go in fall camp. Finally started getting there the first week of the season or so, and then played for the first time in week three at Mississippi State, and he hasn't been himself. I mean, he was 20 pounds overweight for a while, and he's lost a lot of that. He's down to 253. For the first time all season, he looked like the old Arden Key, as one of LSU's players said last week against Auburn. He had six QB pressures, a big sack to end the game, basically. He looked like his old self, so that should be something to watch as well.
So what do you kind of expect to be the difference here? What are you watching for, and what do you think happens?
Well, you don't think, you know, LSU can win a shootout, and that's the kind of game that I'm sure Ole Miss wants to play, is a shootout and get those big plays. But it's going to be tough to get time in the pocket. It's going to be tough against that secondary. You know, so I think it's in the middle. I don't think it's a shootout, but I don't think it's like, you know, 17-10 either. Maybe like 31-24 or something like that. And I just think in the end, you know, you've got an LSU defense that's starting to really hit their stride, even though they're young, and really can pressure the quarterback along with cover and man down the field. And that's probably going to be the difference in the game. Can Ole Miss's receivers win the battle in man coverage? Can Ole Miss's tackles, tight ends, whatnot, block Arden Key and company? And that's probably the difference in the game.
We'll see you up here. Safe travels, and I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thanks, Ross, for joining us today on the podcast. The podcast is brought to you by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com, the makers of Sildenafil. It is the $10 version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill. Same lethal effectiveness. It gets you ready in as little as 15 minutes. You can tear it into quarters or half, or just take the entire pill. 662-252-2321 or TysonDrugs.com.
We'll have Neil's picks up on the site tomorrow. You will enjoy them, I believe. They are probably our most serious piece of content. We like to really get analytical, get into the X's and O's, really dive in deep to the intricacies of football in Neil's picks. Those are brought to you by Vitamend. It's at 3010 Old Taylor Road in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments. Still the same IVs and shots as before, but they've added cryosauna, the infrared sauna. They've got combo packages, the smoothie bar with natural foods, no added sugar, locally sourced. It's awesome. Basically, give them a call, 662-638-3600. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, IVs and shots Friday through Sunday, info@vitamend.com. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. But did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, Romero Miller State Farm challenges you to give them a shot at that property. You won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give them a call, go to Google, read Romero Miller State Farm reviews. Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high-ticket product or service, whether that's HVAC, dentistry, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for RebelGrove.com subscribers and Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings. Call him today.
So SEC Basketball Media Day going on in Nashville today. No surprise, or at least two no surprises. Number one, Kentucky is picked to win the league. I am blown away. And Ole Miss likely undervalued again, coming in at number 10, 1-14. Kentucky, Florida, A&M, Alabama, Missouri, all on the back of Michael Porter Jr. Arkansas at 6, Vandy at 7, Georgia at 8, Auburn 9, Carolina at 11, State at 12, Tennessee at 13, and LSU, which has got a lot of recruiting momentum, but not on the floor this year for the Tigers, at 14. I saw on Twitter a minute ago Corey Keyes putting in that the SEC has had the SEC media has had Ole Miss undervalued at least 6 years in a row in basically 9 of the 11 years or so of Andy Kennedy. The last six, though, predicted 9th, finished 5th, predicted 9th, finished 6th, predicted 6th, finished 3rd, predicted 7th, finished 5th, predicted 7th, finished 2nd, and predicted 7th, finished 4th. Kind of a glass ceiling there for Ole Miss when it comes to preseason predictions. Is it lack of NBA players? Is it lack of something? Because you have an incredibly charismatic head coach. You have a consistent body of work when it comes to SEC standings and finishes. What is it that creates the negative bias toward Ole Miss from a standing standpoint?
I don't know. How's that for just – I don't know. I think it's the lack of NBA presence, but leave that list up for a minute. Kentucky has a lot of NBA presence. Florida doesn't have any recent NBA presence. They have Al Horford, Chandler Parsons, those cats. But those cats have been around a lot. I mean, Joakim Noah's just collecting a check now. A&M, now they have a great young player. A&M's going to be a very good team. Alabama, this is recruiting hype. They might end up being great, but it's recruiting hype. Missouri is one player, and he's a great player. Porter. Michael Porter Jr. is a great player. Arkansas, I don't know. Vanderbilt's been really good over the years. I think there is some steadiness bias there. I don't know what the Georgia thing is all about. They've produced an NBA player, but they haven't done anything tournament-wise. Auburn's picked 9th. I think Auburn could potentially be a lot worse than that. I think Ole Miss is going to be better. South Carolina went to the Final Four last year, and they're quickly disregarded by media. Mississippi State's 12th. That's probably about right. Tennessee's 13th. LSU's 14th. Those are probably close to right. I think Florida's being overvalued. Tennessee at 3 might be undervalued. Alabama's probably being overvalued. Missouri overvalued. I would say Arkansas's probably being overvalued. Vanderbilt 7 is probably about right, maybe a little undervalued. I'm with you. I think Georgia's overvalued, Auburn overvalued, Ole Miss undervalued. Frank Martin's still there. I'll say 11 is undervalued, South Carolina. And then, again, State, Tennessee, LSU at the bottom is about right. I don't know why, but it's a funny thing as it pertains to Ole Miss. They just – I hate the words lack of respect because who cares? You earn it on the court. Every game's going to start 0-0. They're going to play 18 league games. They'll play 9 at home, 9 on the road. It will sort itself out. And Andy Kennedy will once again at the end of February say what he has said the last 10 years, and it will be just as accurate. You are what your numbers say you are, not what media say you are. But Ole Miss is a pretty talented team. You've got the SEC teams up. First team, all SEC is Keevon Allen at Florida, Yante Maiden at Georgia, Hamidou Diallo at Kentucky, Michael Porter Jr. at Missouri, and Robert Williams at A&M. Porter and Williams, potentially the first and second players taken in the NBA draft. They're that good. Second team, Colin Sexton at Alabama, Kevin Knox at Kentucky, Terrence Davis and DeAndre Burnett from Ole Miss, Kendari Weatherspoon from Mississippi State, Tyler Davis from A&M, and Matthew Fisher Davis from Vanderbilt. So, Ole Miss, well represented. There's some star power in Davis and Burnett. And then, you know, they're counting on a lot of newcomers as well. So I think the league's going to be fun to watch. I do agree with Andy Kennedy on the surface, assuming this FBI thing doesn't result in crippling sanctions for programs around the league. I think 10-8 will get you in the field, assuming you take care of business in the non-league.
SEC tournament this year going to St. Louis. It's going to be at Scott Trade Arena in Missouri, I guess part of that whole Missouri getting into the league thing. They get a bone here or there. So
that was agreed to when they came into the league.
So SEC tournament there, again, 2017-18 season beginning soon Ole Miss gets some chances in the non-league. And, again, pretty well represented from an individual standpoint. Team standings about where people thought. However, they've gotten that wrong a pretty good bit. So, also interesting, only one Kentucky player on the first team All-SEC. That has not been something that's happened in past years. Also, we'll give the SEC credit for only putting five players on the first team. Sometimes they put like 11, and that makes no sense. So, props to the league at least for that. We will have Jeffrey Wright tomorrow on the show. We'll go over Neil's picks. We'll have Ryan Brown on Friday, and then maybe something else along the way. But check rebelgrove.com. Good bit of football from last night, recruiting, and more. And we'll have coverage of whatever Matt Luke says tonight as well. So check the podcast tomorrow, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.